CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Global taxes. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, and has written about taxes for decades, five decades at least. And therefore, the global tax regime, first mentioned by Janet Yellen in the United States and then taken up in discussion at the G7 finance ministers meetings and then pursued by the G7 principals meetings, is much in the news. And in these days since G7, we do not want to forget that this is a theory in practice, and many countries are now discussing it. For example, Ireland. Ireland is obliging that there is some kind of rule change coming because Ireland is sought as a low-tax state by corporations such as Apple. Ireland is commenting, the European home of tech giants like Apple, I read from Yahoo News, and Google, is looking to reach a compromise over global taxation that recognizes, quote, the role of legitimate tax competition. This from the finance minister in Ireland. Also, we have comments from other nations that are going to be involved in this transformation of the global tax regime. For example, this comment in these last days from, again, Yahoo News. The plan leaves little for the nations with few corporate headquarters and lesser purchasing power. As the Nigerian ambassador to the OECD, Matthew Bonjibola recently said, quote, developing countries, which supply much of the source material for production, quote, may get next to nothing. And finally, what we have here is Bloomberg recognizing that there's a lot of work ahead. Why? The world's richest nations, the G7, have set the stage for revolution in corporate taxation, but they still have their work cut out to actually achieve that overhaul. Talks in coming weeks, over these next weeks of the summer, between more than 100 governments before a group of 20 meeting in July will build on the outlines of a deal earlier this month. Despite their breakthroughs, however, says Bloomberg, multiple technical details remain unresolved. Richard, a very good evening to you. These are remarks since the G7 meeting.
Yes.
You anticipated all of this. So I want to begin with the Ireland matter, because that comes to mind every time there's a discussion about fair taxes. The three parts of the regime, the 15% minimum, the 100 largest companies to be taxed in some formula to do with their profits, and the special taxes for where a product is sold, such as digital, as opposed to where it's produced. Ireland wants a compromise. Is that to be expected, or are we talking about a long conversation? Good evening to you, Professor.
It's very much to be expected, and you have to have a long conversation. Remember, Ireland is not one of the G7 countries. It's relatively small. It has made an enormous amount of gains by being an extremely attractive tax haven with respect to other people. I have mixed emotions about this particular case because, on the one hand, I think it's utterly impermissible for somebody to say that everybody has to have the same rate of taxation. I think taxation competition is an extremely important device to make sure that governments don't get out of hand, that the exit right from an oppressive government is one of the most important things for keeping government straight. And what the G7 wants to do is to create a tax cartel so that escape is impossible, which means that progressive regimes like the Biden administration can tax the dickens out of all sorts of people who ought to be free to go elsewhere. On the other hand, there's a second question, not about rates, but a question about allocation of profits, which is much more difficult to see. If, in fact, you're a country like Ireland and you have the headquarters there, getting the headquarters isn't a major change in productivity, whether you're in London or whether you're in Dublin and so forth. You're pretty much operating the same way. And so the question that you have to ask, particularly with respect to the European Tax Treaty, Section 107, I think, is the key provision there, is whether or not there's a sufficient form of favoritism by Ireland, which essentially gives it an unfair advantage and distorts things. So the correct thing you have to ask is how much of the profits of a global enterprise should be concentrated in the headquarters and how much of it should be distributed in the field. Now, the Irish have a very unfair advantage by basically having all these companies claim that the cost and profits which are generated throughout the world are very low, and that all of the profits that should then go back to the central countries. Now, for many years, I've written that I think that that's not quite right. So what you do is you have two errors in this case, and you don't make things better by adopting both of them. So they should reject the 15% tax, and then they should apply more seriously the European Union treaty with respect to the fair allocation of profits, because the essentially the Irish are engaging at least in some form of unfair competition. This means that if you've got two conflicting tens, you really want to get a compromise. And let's be very clear about this. The response of major companies in financial markets to changes in tax levels is extraordinarily high. This is not some random group of individuals. They will move and they will be able to shift dollars around. A single point in taxation is probably worth hundreds of millions of dollars to major companies like Apple, and probably worth billions of dollars if you take the full campaign. So it is basically the Irish position on process is you guys are deciding how to bind me, and I'm not part of that particular discussion. I'm not going to go along with this. And remember, the G7 talks, it can't enact anything. And if the Irish continue to hold out, the program will fall. You mentioned the Nigerians. They have a similar problem. And so they have a very legitimate grievance. And remember, there are no former colonial nations, no developing nations that are part of the G7, which is a rich countries club. And so I think those things are appropriate.
Right.
It's so extraordinary about all this.
Janet Yellen gave some language here, and I want to make certain that I'm associating her remarks to her language. She talked about avoiding a race to the bottom. Is that, and you say it's in fact a race to the top. Race to the bottom is her way of referring to Ireland. Is that correct?
To any low tax jurisdiction. This is a term that comes out of American corporate law. And so the question has always been in America, why does everybody want to incorporate in Delaware? And the argument of the critics is that Delaware is just too darn friendly with respect to all of these corporations, and it's a race to the bottom. What we really want to do is to negate the Delaware advantage so that states which are more protective of consumers will, in fact, get a larger share of the market. Well, this might be true if what happens is you put a plant in Delaware which pollutes everywhere else, where it seems to me that protection from the source state should never be allowed. But in these particular cases, you've got to raise money. So you're in Delaware and you're telling somebody, you could come here with your $1 million investment, or you could go to California. We think Delaware is a better deal for you. Why is that? Because it turns out it has a set of rules that, by and large, give corporations a greater degree of freedom with respect to ordinary business judgments, and are pretty tough with respect to conflict of interest cases, which is exactly the right situation. They have a specialized chancery court, which actually knows what it's doing, and so people think that adjudication there is fine. So long as you have to sign people up when you decide to go to Delaware, they're not going to sign up if what happens is this is a race to the bottom. They're only going to sign up if it's a race for the top. And Ms. Yellen is a sort of a classic progressive regulator. She doesn't believe that sophisticated investors know what they're doing, so she wants to basically force them into high regulatory states. That's exactly the same kind of thing that is here. This is a long debate.
I want to come to the other remark that you quote in your piece for defining ideas by the Secretary of the Treasury. This is that the reason for the recommendation by the Biden administration to the G7 for this these changes in the tax regime is, quote, to continue providing policy support to the global economy for as long as necessary to create a strong, balanced, and inclusive economic recovery, end quote. You highlight that word inclusion. That is a way, I believe, of referring to what is going to be necessary for these 100 countries of the OECD that are going to speak before the G20 meeting, because inclusion you translate as subsidies. Is that what Ms. Yellen is thinking, that these countries who are not part of the G7 richest are going to need to be subsidized?
Well, I'm afraid that's the case. Look, let me just give you a domestic example in the United States. I have, as you know, been an implacable foe of the minimum wage for as long as I've been able to speak about these things, because what it does is it protects certain workers with a premium and excludes all others. So assume the protected workers are like the developed nations and the unprotected workers are like the undeveloped nation, right? So what happens is you present this as a situation and say, well, you're absolutely right. So what we need to do is to increase the welfare support for those people who are not on the payroll. And that's kind of like the Biden program for $300 a week for not working and so forth. So what you do is you get a tax program on the one hand by way of restriction and a subsidy program. My position is you do neither. You avoid the distortions of deadweight losses from taxes, and you avoid the terrible incentives that you get from giving subsidy by doing neither. What she is a progressive, and she thinks that she's smart enough, and she isn't, to be able to do both of those things in exactly the right proportions so that you can outperform a market situation. The first and obvious point is that both of these regimes are incredibly difficult to work administratively, and it turns out politically it is not at all clear whether it's a 15% tax or an 18% tax. It's not clear whether it's a $1 billion subsidy or a $5 billion subsidy. So you get uncertainty with respect to the amount that's going to be taxed and redistributed. That's going to create political chaos on top of administrative waste. And this is a standard progressive line. It is what it is that the Democrats are trying to do inside the United States. And, you know, so far they've been held at bay by basically one or two senators. But if they actually got their program, it would be catastrophic for what's going on. I have to say I'm, you know, very disappointed in what I regard as the kind of really misguided policy statements by Ms. Yellen. And I think that the sort of American policy community generally is much too kind to the way in which they greet these Treasury pronouncements.
Well, let's go then to the point of view of what needs to be done. You write that the decision to, for example, let's stay with the minimum tax. There are three parts here. There's the minimum tax. There's the 100 largest corporations and their special taxes. The minimum tax would, there is a reason for taxes. I understand that. But the minimum tax to calculate that would, there is no present formula that would calculate it. Is that correct? The minimum tax?
Yeah, well, you have to know what the tax base is, be able to do these kinds of things. And this is an extremely difficult problem to try to figure out. Have to try to figure out what profits are, right? Well, this term is not well defined in any sense in the following way. Profits are essentially revenues minus costs. But the costs that you're involved with in this case is difficult to estimate. Some of them are present, some of them are future, some of them are in kind, some of them are in cash. If, in fact, for example, you take a simple item like depreciation and you pump it up in the early years, what you do is you reduce the next amount of revenue. Should you do that or should you not? American domestic policy, mistakenly in my view, gives huge subsidies by allowing accelerated write-offs for capital improvements. Well, that's going to distort everything if you're trying to do this sort of minimum public tax. So do you then have to undo the individual subsidies that are created in each nation in order to try to find a neutral playing field? Or are you going to encourage every nation to start giving front-end deductions so as to make sure that the 15% tax applies to an ever smaller slice of what the business is? Anybody who's worked on foreign transfer taxations at all, and I've just done a very little bit with respect to that stuff, realizes that one of the reasons why you have to scrutinize ordinary transactions is if I am a company and I sell to my parent a 1,000 tons of wheat and we charge it at $4 a ton, right? It turns out that that better be a market price, because if it's not a market price, then what happens is it may well be that the company that's buying is overpaying so as to reduce their profits, or underpaying so as to increase the profits from the source country. They will do that in order to make sure that the highest profits appear in the lowest tax rate jurisdiction,
right.
Which means you have to scrutinize all of this stuff. This is a much more ambitious plan. And, you know, when by the time you have to get these rules in place, it's going to take years to articulate them, and then there'll always be a loophole. So the tax is always a game. You put a regime in there, I figure out a way to beat it.
I want to go to another part of this when we come back. That is the 100 largest corporations to be taxed in some new algorithm. Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, we're discussing post-G7, the proposal of a global tax, of taxes on digitals from where they're produced, and on the 100 largest corporations when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.